So how would you like to travel back in time? It was thought scientifically impossible until relatively recently, but according to Stephen Hawking, the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva has brought us one step closer to actually developing a time machine. Now, if they ever become available for sale, mine is the DeLorean Back to the Future model. You remember it well. You know, I want to be that guy. He's sitting in his car, he's speeding down the road, he hits 88 miles per hour and he disappears in a blue flash of light. And all that's left behind are those two fire trails. Now, we all have reasons for wanting to go back in time. And partly, it would just be fascinating, wouldn't it? And wouldn't it be interesting to go back and meet some of the interesting people who have shaped the future? To go back and meet some of our historical heroes. For me, I would be back in Tudor England, and I'd be supping tea with Thomas More and Erasmus. Or I'd be standing in the crowd at Gettysburg, listening to Abraham Lincoln give that famous speech about race, that all men are created equal. But we have other reasons for wanting to go back in time. On occasions, I've just wanted to go back so that I could close my mouth before I said the wrong thing. I mean, who amongst us has not wished that they could change something that has happened in the past? Or even something that's currently happening at the moment? Maybe something that's even happening in your own life. Given the opportunity, so many of us would love to start over. For some, I would imagine the change would be that on this occasion you would take that job that was offered to you. Or maybe you would stay put and not move to that new job. For others, I'm sure we would love the chance to go back and prevent that untimely death of a friend. Maybe this time you'd pluck up the courage to say the thing that you wished you'd always said. Or you take back those careless words that for years you have regretted saying. Now, can you imagine the power to undo things? The power to reverse things? It's a remarkable power, isn't it? Well, in this passage that we're considering together this lunchtime, we see that God has that power. It, in fact, is one of the distinguishing finger marks of God's work in this world. We see in this mother's song statements or allusions to numerous radical reversals. What an unusual song for a young pregnant girl to sing. The Magnificat is one of the oldest poems in the Hebrew Bible, and actually was first sung by Hannah when she discovered that she was pregnant with Samuel. And the song proclaims the radical reversals that would take place in God's kingdom. Naturally, Mary begins by talking about the reversing power that she has experienced in her own life. And we see from verses 46 to 50 that God did not simply choose Mary because she was great and because she was holy. He simply chose her. And Mary is aware of this. But also we see there that she recognizes the great privilege that will be hers for carrying this child, despite the obvious physical and social difficulties that she's going to encounter. She knows that her life would almost certainly have just passed in obscurity, but for this great honor bestowed on her. And we know this, don't we, from this vantage point in history. As we look back, we can see how God lifted up this girl and has permanently engraved her words and her actions upon the conscience and memory of the world. But actually, in this passage, we also have further allusions of God's ability to change things completely around. So you'll notice with me there in 51, are you not reminded of Genesis 11? When those proud people were stopped in their tracks from building the tower and they were scattered in humility across the face of the world. And then in verse 52, I find myself thinking of King Nebuchadnezzar, who, remember, again, was this proud king, humbled and reduced to live like an animal. Or the opposite, that humble, simple shepherd boy who became David, the great king of Israel. Or there in verse 53, it prompts the reminder of the widow in Zarephath, to whom Elijah was sent, whose hunger was exchanged for fullness. As you read on down those verses, you see mention of Abraham and how in faithful obedience to God he prepared to offer up his one and only son. Why? Because he believed in this reversing power of God. As Hebrews 11 reminds us, he believed that God could reverse the great enemy of death, that he could restore his son from the grave. But I found as I was reading through this song that it raised a question for me. Of all the truths and attributes of God that could be praised, why this one? Now, if you've spent any time in the country, you know that stars shine brighter there than in the city. I remember well being in New Mexico, and it was at night, and I got out of my car, and suddenly I was engulfed by this starry sky of sparkling stars all around me. Is it that stars in the countryside are more brighter than the city? Well, no, it isn't, is it? It's just that they appear so because the black background against which they are set is darker away from the city. So the contrast between light and dark is therefore greater. And in a similar way, the power of God is made to stand out all the more sharply by means of contrasts. And we see this when things are done allegedly that cannot be done. Or conversely, when things are undone that supposedly cannot be undone. And the more extreme the contrast, the more defined and sharply do we see God's power revealed. So a shepherd boy becomes a king. Barrenness becomes fertility. A water-drenched pile of wood suddenly bursts into flame by the word of Elijah. Bondage is replaced by freedom. Out of nothing, an entire universe is brought into being. And what is this? That is power. That is raw, wild, limitless power. And that is the power of God. The power to completely turn things around, to move between extremes, to do the unlikely, to do that which cannot be done. But what is the ultimate example of this? What is the ultimate reversal? You know, in Jesus, God said, I am doing a radically new thing. I am coming to you so that you can see who I am in warm flesh, up close, personal, grounded in the world he created. Jesus is the ultimate reversal in God's order. For divinity came in human form. God appeared as a man, and what a God-man he is. It's interesting that Mary's song also foretells of the ministry and the vocation of her son. You remember Jesus' words there in Luke chapter 4, verse 18 in the synagogue. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor, to make the blind to see, to set the oppressed free. Jesus turned out to be the one who would fulfill the prophetic words of his mother. He came, you see, to reverse the problem of the world undone in the Garden of Eden by lies and deceit. He came to change something that had happened in the past. He came to start over a world that had been messed up by people who thought they knew best. I remember as a young lawyer thinking that I knew best. But you know, life's mistakes soon caught up with me. You soon realize as you turn into your 30s that you're more fragile maybe than you thought. I had the great privilege recently to meet a young oil executive from Iran in his 30s. And he came, he was visiting
England, and I was hosting an evening for international people with members of this church, and a mutual friend brought him to this gathering, and during the evening I had the chance to meet with him. He was from Iran. I think hospitality mattered, and he wanted to thank me for the warm welcome that he had received. At the end of the evening, everyone was disappearing and heading home. He came over to me and said, "Johnny, I want to know more about the God of the Bible." Now, what an opportunity. And so I told him about the God who had become a man. I told him about the God who had reversed death through the resurrection. I told him about a God who takes things that are messed up in our lives and he reverses them for good. And then he disappeared off into the night, and I thought I would never come across him again. I had a phone call from our mutual friend on Monday morning, and he was in a bit of a state. And he said to me, "Johnny, last night Imran was out at a restaurant. He suffered a massive asthma attack, and he died on the spot." To be honest with you, I was in a state of absolute shock. What do you do with that? In the evening, I'm explaining to my wife and what had happened, and my little boy, Edward, came along and he said, "Isn't God kind?" I looked across at him, kind of puzzled. "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, God brought Imran to church to get to meet Jesus before he took him home. Have you learned this year that you're more fragile than you thought? Have you made decisions at work that maybe haven't gone as well as you'd hoped? Have you maybe realized that you just don't know as much as you thought you knew?" Now, we don't know, do we, what's going to happen tomorrow. But know this, God is the God who makes the barren fertile, who created something out of nothing. And he is certainly a God who can put right your mistakes from this year past. He is a God who can reverse the past and has a plan for each of your futures. Now, if you've known God's reversing power in your life, but you've lost your way, then know this. Your God is kind. Your God is gracious. Your God is a father and is your father. And he welcomes you home. But then there may be those amongst us this morning who long to know something of the power of God's reversing strength in their lives. Then can I encourage you to think to the example of Imran. God brings you here today to find him before it is too late. Amen.